Good afternoon. Yes. Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, September 20th, 2016. This is the regular monthly meeting of the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee. And I will note that all members are present and accounted for, so we have a quorum. At this point, if there are any members of the public that would like to address the committee on anything not on the agenda, I'll open up public comment. Seeing none, close public comment. First item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from the June 21st, 2016 regular Citizens Oversight Finance Advisory Committee meeting that did not get done at our July meeting because unfortunately we did not have a quorum at the July meeting. So are there any comments on those minutes from June 21st? Questions? All right, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
I move we approve the minutes of the June 21st meeting.
I second.
Thank you. Moved and second, so approved and filed for the record. Thank you.
All in favor.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Opposed? None. Now we will accept them and file for the record. Thank you, Susan. Business items, B. First item on today's agenda is item B1, continued discussion on benchmarking Morro Bay's budget to similar cities. Remember that we have been discussing this for a little while. We are looking for some full-service cities similar to Morro Bay, similar in size, demographics, location, etc., so that we can look at and benchmark maybe our budget to their budget and come up with some conclusions. Marlis volunteered to research some of that. Would you like to report, please?
I will do that. I did go back to the management partners report, and there were two of them, and they used different cities both times for benchmarking. This was at the suggestion of Council Member Heading. And so in the most recent management partners study, there were seven cities that they were going to try to benchmark, but as it turned out, only four of them submitted additional information, so they really only were able to benchmark four. Those four were Atascadero, Capitola, Pismo Beach, and Scotts Valley. And in looking at those four cities, what stood out in my mind was, first of all, that Atascadero is much larger, and Pismo Beach and Scotts Valley have much higher median household incomes. So they aren't necessarily comparable. Also, Atascadero is not a coastal town. So I'm thinking that we need to do some more research and really try to establish the criteria for determining what we would select into the group to benchmark. And first of all, I think it would need to be cities of a similar size. And so you can't really compare, like Atascadero's 28,000 and Morro Bay's 10,700. And that means they're going to get economies of scale from a lot of their services that we aren't going to be able to achieve with our population. Also, they really do need to be similar in household income because, of course, the richer the folks are that live in a place, the more property taxes they're going to pay, the more revenue they're going to have to spend on services. So that's important. Also, I think it's important that it's a coastal town or a harbor town. That is so important to our economy. And so that would be something we could also consider or think about, especially since we rely so heavily on tourism and that coastal towns would rely on tourism. Another variable that I don't know if it's how important it would be, but we could think about it, would be the age composition. We have an older population in Morro Bay, and that may very well make a difference in what services we need here. So that's another one that I think would be possible. My suggestion would be to add a couple of cities, and I would add Grover Beach and Carpinteria to look at as possible comparison cities, along with Pismo Beach, even though it has a higher income, Half Moon Bay, Fort Bragg, and Capitola. Now, not all of those responded to the management partners' request for information. But in designing this study, I would imagine that we would probably reach out by telephone and do telephone interviews as opposed to a questionnaire, which is what management partners apparently used, since they talked about not getting a response from some of the cities. So I think the next step would be to come up with a more detailed research design and just to see if there's interest from the City Council in moving forward with a benchmarking study at this point. So that's my report.
Thank you, Marlis. Excellent. Any discussion, question, comments? Go ahead, Susan.
One thing that I thought that you might want to consider doing, and one of the reasons why we had some of the oddball cities in there were just strictly because they did have a harbor. You may want to split out our harbor department and match it to something like, say, Port San Luis, something along that line where you can separate them out where they specifically have a harbor district. That might help. I'm not sure how easy that's going to be to find. The only one I know, you know, like I said, locally is Port San Luis, but there are, I know, are others. Ventura has its own harbor district. Obviously, it's much larger, but that could be a consideration as well. And that's actually been one of the most difficult situations that we've had, is trying to match not only our population size but our demographics and all of the services that we provide, because we're a full service city and a lot of them aren't. So that's been quite a challenge. So I'm hoping the committee can come up with something. Maybe splitting it up might help.
Thank you. Good suggestion. The full-service city, as we said at the beginning, that's going to be the challenge, because otherwise we're going to find some differences, but it'll make it hard to do any analysis with that.
It sounds excellent. Probably there won't be the ideal comparison no matter what. The only one that I guess I'm not too sure of would be Carpinteria, as to why you picked that one. The rest of them seem to, from what I know of them, like Half Moon Bay, other than their fairly large, very nice hotel they have there, is very similar. Capitola, and forget the other ones you mentioned. Carpinteria is the only one that I didn't.
Well, it was a similar size city.
Really?
Okay. Yes, 11,000. So, and it really is important that they're similar in size.
Okay.
That's, I think, probably the critical variable. Because some of the differences you'll be able to explain by the difference in income levels. If they're not the same size, similar in size, it's very difficult to make comparisons about the services. For example, a police department to operate 24/7 requires so many officers, and you know, it requires 20, basically. And that's if you're at 10,000 population or 15 or whatever. So you start to get economies of scale as you get larger. So that's why it's really important if you want to start to compare services.
Thanks. Betty?
I was wondering, because of the older population and the older homes that we have, and we have limited land and things, would there be any interest in new starting homes or any kind of businesses that could be added that are, like, I understand Grover Beach is doing some kind of remodeling and repurposing, so I just wondered if something like that should be included as a notice.
You know, certainly we can, once you specify what the cities are, we can, formulate the research questions to see what we want to learn from the study. And so if we want to learn about innovative ways that they might be attracting tourists or new businesses, we should include that in the questions that we ask. So, yeah, I think there's still quite a bit of work to be done to flesh out the research design.
Dave, any comments? Are you okay with this?
Do we have any real or any general idea of what the benchmarking criteria will be? What criteria are we going to use to benchmark against? Are we going to, for example, follow what management partners did, which is fairly limited from what I saw, or are we going to expand that beyond just revenues and expenditures, and are we going to have any, are you going to be looking at any performance metrics or anything like that? Because I would think that that would have to be taken at least somewhat into consideration when you're picking a community.
Well, I think certainly specifying the variables you're going to look at is important, and I would definitely recommend including outcome measures or performance measures, calls for service, exactly what level of service are these departments providing. And so, yes, we would need to specify those in the research design. I remember Councilmember Heading was most interested in just roughly looking at the level of service and the cost as a comparison across the cities, but I think we would have to dig deeper than that if we wanted to come up with anything that would be useful to the council.
Now, one thing that was mentioned was we should be looking at coastal communities, but in my view, that's pretty limiting. It seems to me there are plenty of other communities in California that have an economy similar to Morro Bay, in that it's a tourist reliant economy, and you know, if you look at a city like San Luis Obispo, for example, or Paso Robles, which was in the first management partner study, they have a much more diverse economy, and they're getting a lot more sales tax revenue. TOT is, I believe, a smaller portion of their overall revenue stream than others, property tax and sales tax. But it seems to me that if there may be some other communities we could look at in California that are more tourist-based, maybe some mountain communities like South Lake Tahoe, for example, or that have a lot of hotel rooms. Somewhere, Fort Bragg was on the original list. Fort Bragg is a harbor town, and it is very tourist dependent, especially now that the lumber industry up there has collapsed. So they do have a lot of hotel space. So that might be something to consider also. But there may be inland communities that are more in line with tourism, and then I think the population demographic is important too, age demographic.
Right. And Fort Bragg was included in the second management partners study. That was a town that did not reply or did not send information. So they recognized that it was a similar city to Morro Bay and would be good in the comparison. And as I say, I think it would be better to actually reach out and do telephone interviews with folks, because I think then we would get better information than if we send them a questionnaire and hope they reply.
I agree. I think actually calling their finance people, right, would be a good thing to do. And I'd certainly be willing to help in that effort.
Good.
Well, we have to remember their time and set up a procedure so we're not interfering.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Certainly. Yeah, you would schedule the interviews in advance and warn them about what questions you were going to ask them so they'd be prepared and make sure that they're agreeable to share the information. Yeah.
And we get the right person.
Yes, that too.
Thank you. It sounds like we have a plan, and I know Marlis's background in research, so you would be the logical candidate to do that. And you have a couple candidates here that will assist you as we move forward. Susan, go ahead.
So the council was hoping that we would be able to bring something to them by October 25th, and that doesn't sound like it's going to be possible.
That's correct.
So I'm going to let council know, or I'll let Dana know, to take this off the agenda for the 25th, and then we're going to have a whole new batch of finance people that are coming in October. So we're going to have a new finance director, Craig Schmollinger. We'll have a new budget and accounting manager, Sandra Martin, and we'll have a new senior accounting technician, Valerie Webb, coming in. Sandra has a very broad, very extensive, knowledge base. Craig is a budget analyst, and so there may be some good things that, because there are so many people that are coming in, we may be able to get more assistance from either one of them. So that will also be a consideration, and we can probably address that at the October meeting with the committee, and of course Craig will be here for that, and I'll invite Sandra.
Thank you. That's an excellent suggestion, and you may recall we expressed some concern at our last meeting that we couldn't meet this deadline. While we want to meet deadlines where possible, we also want to do the job the right way the first time. And I hesitated, you know, slipping the deadline in. But now that we see how much more is really going to be involved to do a decent job of this, I think that's very appropriate that we do that. But and as it is on the agenda, continued discussion, we'll keep that on the agenda. But thanks for that, Susan. We're aware of that, and that would be good. We'll discuss that when we get to the future agenda items. So thanks, Marlis, for an excellent report, and I think we'll move forward with some of your suggestions after you've had an opportunity to do a little more research and craft out how this project should be designed.
I'd be happy to do that, so okay. I will.
Thanks. All right, good. That brings us to item B2, presentation on actions taken to date to correct the fiscal year 14-15, that would be the one ending last year, summer of 2015, the audit findings. We had that, I think, in our June minutes, but we didn't have a meeting in July. We were supposed to have a presentation. So, Susan, were you just going to go over that, or what was the plan there?
Yes, I was going to go over the staff report, and just to remind the committee, the 2014-15 audit was not completed until March 31st of 2016. Mm-hmm. So we were made aware of all of the findings roughly around March 20th. So all of the actions that we've taken to date have happened just over the last 6 months. And we've been doing our best to get some things done, but we, with the turnover in personnel, training new people to take over for the people that are leaving, and then, of course, new people coming on and training them, we're not making much headway right now. So on the one thing that I wanted to point out, the policies and procedures manual, that's not been updated. There have been some things that I put in there that we did have. There are other things that I believe Sandra Martin is a policy and procedure kind of lady, so I have a feeling she'll take that bull by the horns and run with it. We had some issues with payroll, and one of the problems that they had was not that we were not looking at the payroll, but nobody was signing things. And that was probably one of the biggest things. It wasn't that people weren't looking at what was going on. No one was taking the time to stop and sign the register to say, yes, I looked at this, or sign this off and say, yeah, I looked at this checklist, or I reviewed this. We're being much more diligent about that. So that should satisfy some of those concerns, plus the fact that we're making sure that the department heads are routinely signing their invoices. If they don't, we send them back. So we're being very careful about who signs, making sure the proper signatures are on there, or a designee has been appointed that is able to sign that invoice at that level. So there have been some adjustments there. One issue with payroll that we've had, we're training a new person who was going to take over and has discovered she can't. So we're going to be making a little bit of a rush project on training our new people on payroll, as well as letting her finish the process out, because our senior accounting technician is leaving in November. And once they leave, because the people who are leaving receive an early retirement incentive, you cannot bring them back for 6 months. CalPERS will not let you. Mm-hmm. Because there is an interim, there is an ordinance or a resolution that you can put in place for an emergency use of a retired annuitant. And so it waives the 180 days requirement that they stay gone. Can't do that if you offer them an incentive, or if they're going to receive an incentive. It's whether they've gotten it or they're going to get it. It does it either way. You can't do it. So that's going to be a little bit of an issue where we won't be able to bring Chris back. we'll have this other person trained, and so you may find that if you come into City Hall that we have babies there, because Chloe will be coming in to help us, and she'll be bringing her baby, because that was her problem for not being able to stay with us, was, you know, she was having issues with how much money she was making and how much childcare it cost.
Okay. So the important thing is, though, as was pointed out in the audit, that these checklists were not being signed by a member of the management staff. So it sounds like you've addressed that.
Correct.
And I think that issue came up at the budget workshop, too, mm-hmm. about that. So I want to make sure it's clear that the public understands, you know, regardless of change in personnel, the process is being appropriately addressed and has already been modified, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And then, of course, we have our purchasing module that we purchased. We started the process of implementing that. The person that was doing that is going to be retiring early, as am I. So we're holding that off for our new finance director and budgeting manager. They can take that one and move forward along with that. It's there. It's ready to go. It's just a matter of someone... We have a policy in place for using it, and it's just a matter of someone moving forward and taking the steps to, you know, to put it into place and say, we're starting now, here it is, everything you do, you have to go through this purchasing module. So that one's going to be pretty easy to implement. It's just right now with the audit and with training other people, it's not something that we're devoting our energies to.
Okay.
And then, of course, the other issue that I addressed in the audit, and I was very vocal about it, there were an awful lot of things that the auditors picked out and said we weren't doing that we were, and I refuted that repeatedly and even commented with the auditors about the language barrier that we experienced. And unfortunately, the person they interviewed, rather than saying, I don't understand what you're asking me, she said, oh, I don't know if we do that. So the auditor marked down that we don't do it. And there were a lot of those that we actually had to revisit in the beginning of March so that we could finalize the audit, because I wouldn't sign off on it without something in there saying part of this is your fault too.
So that's a training issue, not an audit finding per
se.
Thank you.
So what was the language difficulty? I'm sorry.
Our auditors are Asian, and the two auditors that came, one was Kathy Cho, and she has an excellent command of English. The other person that came out to do the audit was Jasmine, and I don't recall Jasmine's last name. She did not have good communication skills. Mm. So she was rather difficult to understand. And rather than the person that she chose to interview, which is exactly the person that I would choose somebody who is actually in the pool doing the work, not necessarily the manager or the department head, who's going to say, everything's great. This person is going to tell you, I don't know what that is. The other side of it is they're going to get nervous and they're going to be afraid to say the wrong answer, so they're going to, you know, make things up, and that gets a little uncomfortable. But, you know, you can expect that. You want that person to be able to say, well, I don't know that I get it very much, but I know it's right there. And so they have an idea of where they need to go or what kind of books and rules govern what they're doing. She got nervous, didn't understand, and so a lot of her answers were, I don't know. I don't think we do that. And yeah, it was. We were able to counter some of that with actually showing them desk manuals and that kind of thing. But it was unfortunate.
I'm not as concerned about that. I think we're at a stat of the language discussion, some of that we just had here. Auditors are paid to get findings. So that's going to happen. That's part of the nature of the beast. So what you're saying is what I ran into every audit I was involved with. What I am concerned about, though, is what's being put in place with this huge turnover to do some checks that with all new people, And without potentially a lot of overlap of training, what's being put in place to maybe do a 2-month, let's see how everybody's doing? What, I mean, with such a massive turnover, I've never really heard of something so massive, other than maybe a startup company where you're starting and everybody's new, which I've never been involved with. But what's happening to address this? In 2 months, there's going to be like a total turnover of everyone. How do they get trained?
Well, we've got Craig will be coming in on October the 3rd. And we've still got a fairly stable staff out in the finance department. We have our accounts payable person. We have our utility people. They know what we're supposed to do. We have documentation for accounts payable that clearly states you have to have this kind of signature on this. Or when you get an invoice, these are the things you look for. So there are practices. There's a desk manual at payroll, at accounts payable. There's a cash receipts procedure. There's a utility billing manual. And there is a, well, there's not a process for business license or business tax necessarily. I believe it's written instructions, but it's not real formalized. For the others, all of their procedures are well laid out and have been. They were in place when the auditors came out. What we've added to them is the list of people who need to sign off, and it's on the checklist now that you need to look at the invoice and verify that signatures, proper signatures are in place, and it says, see file, here for signatures, and who could sign. So we've done that. Chris is training the new payroll people, and they know that they have to bring the payroll register into me, which will then be Craig. He'll review the payroll register, and he'll do all of the sign-offs on that. We already have another person who's staying who signs off on the checklist. So there's enough stability and there's enough redundancy in the desk manuals to tell people to go and look for these things to make sure they're being done.
And Susan, there's a, it's not an overall department. One of the positions has been upgraded. I believe one was created. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is your replacement. And there's a transition overlap for both of you of what?
Yes.
6 weeks, 8 weeks?
Yeah.
Okay, so that, I believe, addresses it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, please.
I think that's really it. Okay. We are going to have to address the problem with some of our standalone systems. One of them's active in the rec department, and that's something that, again, it's going to fall to the new people to figure out what we're going to do there. I know that Recreation has had a huge turnover. They have a new coordinator starting, I believe, the 10th of October. And once Carmichael starts, that'll be part of his job to start researching software that'll integrate with our system. The other one that we're installing is CityWorks, which will integrate through our with permitting, so there won't be any more of this printing off a report and bringing it over, and yeah, the checks match the report, but did anybody go back and audit to make sure that somebody didn't kind of slide a permit over here and, you know, that kind of thing. We don't have the automation going on with our Hinderleiter-Delamas permitting system or business tax system. Those two are going to be replaced with CityWorks. The CityWorks implementation for permitting, I believe, is now going to be January of 2017. Once they get permitting online, then they're going to look at business tax, and I don't think they're going to be looking at business tax until maybe March. So that's one that's going to be delayed again. But CityWorks will have the transfer protocols in place, where they can send a file over on a daily basis so we know what permits they've received, and then we match the money that they bring over with that. So that'll be a little more seamless, and there won't be the manual the manual procedures. The only manual procedures then will still be with our harbor department. that has a product that doesn't have a transfer protocol and recreation. I believe Harbor is looking at some new software, and I know that prior to her departure, the recreation supervisor, Heather Salyer, was looking at some new software, probably a more updated version of Active that had the transfer protocol that we can put into place. And I pretty much think that's it. I touched on the purchase orders. I also did talk about, we did have a comment on the personnel action forms. We verified with the auditor at the end that, yes, we are doing them correctly. We now have the city manager signing all of them. So that will make them very happy. And then, of course, we've been taking budget reports more frequently back to council. We did take a third quarter budget report and had that approved. We will get better with that as more people come on board, because you'll have a specific person dedicated to monitoring the budget, and so they can talk to the departments and say, hey, you're getting close, you need to come and request more money, or you need to stop spending, or there's something you need to do, whereas that burden had been on the department head. But I think that's it. We're working on it.
Okay. No, that's great. That sounds very thorough. The pension date, debt that was understated, all that has been addressed. That was in their last findings, I believe. The pension-related debt was understated.
Yes,
remember that 1.5?
Yeah. Yes, it was a 13-14 issue that we should have included in our 13-14. They fixed it, and we're good to go on that.
It sounds like they're kind of like little mini computer programs. The CityWorks, is that what that is?
CityWorks, yes, is one of them that's being installed.
Okay.
New one.
And then Harbor does something, and Rex has something that may or may not be similar. There is an IT specialist. Has that person looked at the needs of those three to see if potentially one little program could run all three? Then there's a lot more, you know, you can use one versus three, or there maybe there's another way. I would invite and have an IT person be making, substantially be involved in that decision. Having individual people in departments, they're just not going to be as familiar as that person, I would presume. Not that they don't have some IT skills, but is that something the IT person looks at?
Yes. He's involved with Lori Stelz down at the Harbor in looking at the products that she's looking at to perform services for the Harbor Department. There are certain, we have a mainframe financial system that has miscellaneous billing, and it just doesn't offer enough fields for either recreation or for Harbor. And to put all the fields in costs more than them to go get a product. If their product will transfer, we're fine with that. But each one of them has certain information that has to be input into their systems, and that's what Steve is looking at to see what kind of specialized programs they have, and he's working with Lori on that for the Harbor so that they can get a product that will satisfy her, satisfy the transfer protocol, and, you know, be successful for what we want. Same thing with recreation. I don't know that he's gotten involved in recreation at this point. I know he has with the Harbor because they don't have anybody over in recreation that's actively looking for a product, but he will. He'll be the one that'll make sure that it's got all the pieces we need to transfer over into our mainframe. Steve Dorr, yes.
Just a couple comments there. Typically in our IT business, every mainframe legacy system is like this, and the systems are very dated. There's a lot of new systems out, but they're very, very expensive to replace, number one. Number two, Susan can address how long the city has even had an IT person. I think that was one of Mr. Buckingham's first jobs to get somebody in here and start looking at that. So I think we're going to see some improvement, but it's going to take take some time, and it's, you know, ideally maybe you'd want to replace that system and with some SAP or something a little more updated, but I can tell you right now it'd be very expensive and a huge transition, so probably not going to happen. But
we do have a deputy city manager who's coming on board late October. His name is Ikani, and I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name, but it's starts with a T. He's going to do, he will be responsible for oversight of recreation, IT, and then economic development. One of the things that Sam Taylor had done was Sam Taylor had put out the RFP for
the fiber optic.
Thank you
thing.
Very much. Fiber optic. I started to say cable, and I thought, no, it's not cable.
No,
For the fiber optic, and so we've got that in place. Econia will be coming in and looking at standardizing our computer systems, standardizing, looking at our software to see if we can get products that talk to each other. Our mainframe program was updated in 2008 to New World's latest software that was 3 years old at that time. The product that Morro Bay bought in 2002 was a 17-year-old product. And so it was very outdated. It was very cumbersome. There were a lot of functions that even the vendor wasn't supporting anymore. So when I came to Morro Bay and I saw the product that we had, I was a little disheartened that Morro Bay had purchased it, but I knew that there was a product that was out there that was an upgrade. They did give us a customer discount, which knocked almost $100,000 off the product. So they are incredibly expensive, and to go out and try to buy a new one
Right. And it was interesting, on the discussion at City Council on the fiber optic, there were a lot of citizens stating, no, let's not do this. So, you know, the council has to balance, you know, what the citizens want and what may take us forward and automate or innovate some of these outdated solutions. But good point. Okay, so I think that, is there any other comments on the? Go ahead, thank you.
Just for my own clarification, is CityWorks, is the financial system part of CityWorks, or is CityWorks a separate system?
CityWorks is separate, and it will speak to the financial system. So it will have a transfer protocol for the transactions that occur on CityWorks. Will transfer over on a daily basis. We upload it into our financial system, and we have record of the financial transactions that were completed.
So are these new systems for the Harbor Department that they're looking at, they're considering replacing their legacy systems with, are these going to communicate with CityWorks, or are they going to communicate with the financial system?
They'll communicate with the financial system. And that's
okay.
Our New World Systems, Logos.net.
Okay, so what they're looking at, they're being very clear that needs to have a communications protocol that's going to work with the existing financial system, whatever they're going to replace the current legacy systems with.
Yes.
Okay. And then I wanted to make a couple of comments about the auditor, or ask some questions about the auditor. I'm not so uncomfortable with this issue of the language barrier, because I look at it as an issue of contractor performance. The city of Morro Bay has a contract with the PUN Group. The city is the customer. They're providing a service that's required under law, but still they are a contractor. And I guess the one question I would have is, has this issue of the communications or language barrier been addressed to the contractor?
Yes, it has been. And the person that came out as the second auditor, field auditor, was a gentleman who spoke very clear, very perfect English. Okay. So we made a point of telling them that we did have issues with understanding, and while it may be their ability to communicate with us or our ability to understand them, we needed to make sure that that didn't happen again, so it didn't with this audit. The 15-16 audit, the two auditors that are coming out again are Catherine Cho, and I don't remember the name of the gentleman who came out, but he'll be back.
So this was the first year for the auditor, the auditor's contract. How long does this contract run?
Contract was set up to run for 4 years with two possible extensions, but either entity can cancel the audit contract at any time.
So understanding that with a new contractor, there's always startup issues, lack of familiarity and so on that improves over time. Aside from that, there may have been some of that in this last audit. Do you see any other issues with contractor performance, or were you satisfied with the work that they did on this past audit and believe that they will perform well in the future?
I was satisfied with their performance. They didn't know us. They didn't understand some of our funds that we merged together, and there were some growing pains on both sides. Now everything's pretty simplified. They're ready. They've got their schedules all set, and it's running. So far, it's been running very well. They're going to be back out here on the 26th of September. We just sent them the trial balance for 15-16, and we're on schedule to be done sometime early December. So I think it's going to be very good. I was very happy with them.
Okay, great. That answers my questions. Thank you.
The only comment I had is when you talked about the language barrier, I would thought you were talking about questions, because lots of times when people come out, instead of asking about the budget, they'll say, what is on page 7? And it's the budget page, and some people don't recognize it because they're so used to doing budget. But I also think that because of all these different things that are going on in the different manuals, sometimes people are just doing their job and they don't really understand how it all comes to them.
And that's a very true statement. When you have high turnover in your department, you do lose that flow of where is this coming from? Well, you just put this account number on it and you move on. And that was something that we made sure that we had our desk manuals in place and had each of the incumbents show the desk manual to the new person that was coming in so that everybody had an idea, and then did cross-training throughout. So it's you're right. I mean, somebody new coming in, they don't understand where things come from. They don't know where recreation is. They don't know where tourism is housed. There are a lot of things that they won't know. And our new people are going to be in the same situation. Even though they're managers, they're still going to have to learn where everybody is, where all the players are, and who does what.
Okay, so I guess to summarize, you're happy with the performance. Everything's been resolved. You believe the city, based on the discussion and the comments, response have been addressed. There's termination for convenience clause in the contract. One other quick question. Do the costs for the subsequent years go down at all from the first year, or is that just built into the contract and level set?
The initial year did have startup costs,
okay,
and then it seemed to flatten and slightly increase every year afterwards.
Okay.
But it
seems reasonable.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Any other comments, anybody? Good. Thanks, Dave. Those were good comments. All right, so are you looking for anything from us on there?
Just receive and file.
Receive and file. Okay, all right, thanks. Fine. Then that takes us to item B3, discussion on use of proceeds from sale of property at Coral and San Jacinto. That was the property that was originally designated for fire station house. Susan, can you update us quickly? Is that sale going through? I understand it's in escrow, maybe?
I was asking our city manager about that, and he said it's still just out there. And the whole process that's in place right now is still in escrow. Nothing's happening. And he said he doesn't really have much of an update, so I can't provide you with much.
Okay. So there's a transaction in escrow, bottom line,
because
that's what out there means.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, my understanding from just looking through the documents is that there was an amendment, and that amendment basically changed the way the buyer was going to pay for the property. Is that correct?
I'm not aware of that. I haven't been real involved in this process.
Okay.
It's more been something the city manager and Scott have been involved in. My involvement in it was more that I knew it was going on and happening. I was involved in one of them, not this one.
Okay.
So I think what they were more worried about was not so much how the sale was going to go down, but what we should do with the money when we get it.
Okay, because all of the background materials in our packet had to do with the amendment process, and it sounded from looking through it like originally the buyer was going to basically pay for it, and now the buyer is basically going to take out, we're going to subsidize him while he's paying us back with interest over a three-year period, so we aren't going to see $799 off the top immediately. At least that's the way I interpreted what I read, which would impact how we use the proceeds.
And that's similar to what happened when we sold Market Avenue originally. We sold that with a note. As the note proceeds were paid, debt service payments were made, we went ahead and used those. That's what was funding our facility maintenance plan. And so that fund got those annual payments, and that was, you know, wonderful because we did a lot of deferred maintenance that we weren't able to do. I think that's part of what they're looking at as well with this. If we got a lump sum, what do we want to do with it? If we're just getting payments, do we want to use that to pay down the fire station debt? So I think that's kind of where...
But our issue here in the committee is not really the essence of the transaction, whether it's based on an installment contract or an outright purchase cash to buyer. Our issue here is, however the proceeds trickle in, we believe, or at least we've had some discussion, that those proceeds should be used to pay down the fire station debt, not capital, not maintenance, not recreation, anything else, because of the history of that property being originally slated for, you know, a firehouse. It wasn't used for that purpose. Consequently, however you look at it, the city borrowed more money to put the fire station, build it somewhere else, and now that this property is being sold, we believe it's consistent with what the Measure Q funding is and expenses, that our recommendation, provided we all agree, would be those proceeds, however they come in, be designated specifically for payment of the loan on the current fire station.
With what I know, that's exactly where I would stand. I was hoping, unless these people are here to talk about it, I was hoping there was Janice House might be here. I'd like to know more about it. In the budget, the words imply that the intent is to do exactly what you just said, Barbara. So unless hearing otherwise or something significant was out there, like we just had a tsunami hit us and maybe want to rethink that concept, I would support that. But is there something that we have officially gone on record as a recommendation to the council to do exactly what you just said?
No, that's exactly why I put it on the, because that's going to be my next, that's why I was asking on the previous item if there's something I blended in with that memo. What I would recommend we do is draft a memo of our recommendation after discussion of this. It's, you know, a couple meetings, input from citizens we've had in the past. This is exactly, this is our recommendation. It's only a recommendation, but based on the history, that's what we want to do. So I'll entertain discussion or motion.
Well, I was hoping that staff would basically come with research that would either support this, because it seemed like a few council members recalled that was their intent. City staff was basically implying that, well, maybe we want to use this some other way, acting as if that wasn't cast in concrete, and the words I see are not cast in concrete. So it does provide some wiggle room. Is there some document that exists other than what's been put in the budgets that clearly imply that would be the use of the money? However, whether it's installments or a lump sum.
I went back through all my Measure Q and I couldn't find it. So it was really one of these things, different councils. Maybe you could go to the specific minutes of a meeting, you know, 8 years ago and dig it out. I tried to find, based on what was on the website, I couldn't find any documentation.
We couldn't find anything that specifically said there is no deed restriction that says that the proceeds, once it's sold, have to go for fire or, you know, something to do with fire. There's nothing we can find that clearly says that this is what should happen. It's just, that's been the intent since the day I got here. That's all I've heard, is that we have this property out in Cloisters, and as soon as we sell it, the money goes to the fire station. But there's nothing, there's no documentation saying you have to do it.
Any public comment? Sorry, I should be opening for every item, but thank you.
Well, I definitely think we should make that recommendation to council. That seems pretty clear.
We've heard it from Measure Q former members. We've heard it based on from staff. We've heard it from citizens at City Council. It's just a matter of, you know, clearly stating this is our recommendation.
Right. Well, and it's logical.
And it's logical. Absolutely. Right. So we could, and even if there were something specific, if we can't find it, you know, we're only advisory, so council could still, you know, overrule that, but.
But it's been my memory since the time we've had Measure Q that was the intent. It was to go, it was a fire station was going to build there. If it wasn't going to build there and we had to do this thing here because of the earthquake and do all of that, that's where the money was go. And so as being here during that time, that's my memory.
Okay, and what I'm hearing from staff is that they have done due diligence to go back and look. And so they're on record by saying basically while there's nothing in the deed restrictions, everything they have found also does support what we're talking about here. And there's nothing they found through their due diligence already that would suggest otherwise.
So we need a motion maybe?
I would move that we recommend to City Council that the proceeds from the sale of the property at San Jacinto and Coral Avenue be directed to pay off the debt of the fire station.
I second. But I want to add, should we say no matter how the money comes in, or does that matter?
Yeah, I said the proceeds. But yeah. It will just be a little bit slower than if they paid it all, you know, so it'll take 3 years. But
who cares?
Right.
Any further discussion on this item? All in favor?
No, just a second. Can you read, just to make sure we get the wording right, what is the wording? Can we read it back?
They go on YouTube and pick it up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That the proceeds of the sale of the property on San Jacinto and Coral Avenue be directed to pay off the debt on the fire station, on the new fire station.
I just want to clarify, is it going to pay off the debt or is it going to pay down the debt?
Pay down the debt. Pay down.
Very
good clarification. Yes, there will be debt, but that will help.
And it'll reduce the amount of interest paid on that debt significantly, I believe.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, we had some, Susan ran some numbers for us when it was a full MOT. So there's no prepayment penalty or anything on the certificate of participation, correct? Okay. Thank you. All right. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. So the question is, are you guys okay if I draft something and send it around? You can edit it, and then we'll... Okay. I will do that. Thank you. Bringing us to item B4, discussion on presentation of quarterly performance reports, contracts, and investment portfolio. That was from the July meeting, I think, or the June meeting.
No, this was new, and I put it on here because we have a new finance director coming in, and I just wanted to make sure that we could be, that I could very clearly let him know how the committee wants to see the reports. So if there is a certain level of detail that the committee wants to see, if you want to see the high-level reports and ask for more details, how the committee wants me to present or us to present the quarterly financial reports, and just so that Craig has an idea of what he's, you know, what he's going to be coming into, and also to let you know that on Tuesday, October the 11th, the department directors are going to be presenting their
quarterly budget reports
to
like they
the city
do to
manager.
Okay. Okay.
So if a couple of committee members, I think we can even have as many as three.
Okay. All right, perfect. So a couple comments on that. Number one, with respect to the new person coming in and their time, my vote would be maybe a higher level initially. I think all of these candidates have experience, so they might know what citizens want, and that's what we are. So, and once we have something to look at, then we'll have a framework to say, hey, you know, we don't need, you know, hundreds of pages, or but we do need a little more detail, et cetera. We have looked at some of the investment, and the format you gave, I think one-page Excel, was pretty straightforward. We know there's not too much you can do there in terms of safety and liquidity. So... that would be my thought, but let's see what the rest of the members, anybody have any comments how they would like to see anything to give them any advanced direction or give them free rein to present something high level, and we'll go from there.
I vote for high level.
I would like to see what they think we like.
Okay.
I think I agree with Betty.
Agreed.
I'd say pretty open-ended combination of err on the side of less detail than more detail, but based on their experience, we'll defer to their judgment.
The only thing I might add, and having looked at it previously and participated in one of the budget meetings, is that when the staff does their PowerPoint presentations, it's very clear that they are simply addressing exceptions. And if that could be standardized in some way so that we're getting the same information from all of the departments, that would be very helpful. I found it difficult the first time looking at it to understand because they were all presenting different information. So that would be helpful. I pass that on.
And also at that time,
so what I did for the third quarter, which didn't get presented to the city manager because we were at that point in budget, I standardized the PowerPoint. And what's going to happen is if I'm over, if I have an anomaly in my payroll and nobody else does, I'm going to present my payroll, but the next person won't. So it'll still be the same type of thing. You just might have, you'll have different categories that'll be presented. So my anomaly might be not be the same as the fire chief's or the police chief's, but if it's all laid out the same, and that's what I did, I laid it out for him and said, put your things in like this. So
you're right. It was the format, I think, last time that was all over the map.
So yeah, hopefully
again, this process will evolve.
Get done. They like to put pictures in.
So I agree. We could have up to three folks there. And I think I'll ask the committee members to get back to me once you get the date on what their availability is. And then if we have more than three, because I think I'd like to participate as well, but depending on everybody's availability, if we have more than three, maybe we'll break it up because, as I recall, it was an all-day event. So, because I'd like everybody to, if they're interested, to be able to. And if I have to give any prioritization, it might be to the budget committee, the ones doing the citizens' budget, since that's such a critical thing. But hopefully we can accommodate everybody. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah, it usually takes any, and this one's going to be, will be very, very simple. Mm-hmm. It's going to be more, here's the first quarter. Hopefully the journal entries got in because we're working on lots of different things. So it might not be a good one for for the department heads. It'll give them their first chance at standardizing, and they may not have any anomalies because they barely spent anything. The only thing they can bring out are, hey, we spent our contracts. By the way, July 1st we paid all these contracts, and so yes, it looks like we've spent 90% of our budget, but that's because we budgeted for all our contracts and they came due in July. So that's part of what'll come through. But we're also going to be talking about the funding that we have, the excess funding that we have from the 15-16 fiscal year, and how we should spend it. So that'll be another topic of conversation. The city manager's devoted 2 hours to the process, and so I'll let you know what time. I believe we scheduled it for 9:00 in the morning, and I'll let you know for sure.
But it's 2 hours for the entire
thing.
Okay, and then also you might check with him on the protocol if they want us to ask questions or comment or not.
Okay.
We maybe just want to be bystanders or whatever, but we'll follow your lead on that. So if you guys, are you okay with that, getting back to me?
Sure.
As soon as Susan gets us, you'll have a date? Or do you have a date?
We do have a date. It's October the 11th.
Oh, okay.
It's
9 a.m.
I believe it's 9 a.m., but I'll check that for sure, and I'll let you all know.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Thank you. And then you guys just let me know. Thanks. All right, that leads us to B5, progress update, public-friendly budget. So I guess the first comment is I think we had a rather successful or well-attended public workshop on this item. We had a lot of suggestions from the audience, a lot of questions. I understand, Susan, there were some briefings or meetings afterward with either citizens or some of our committee members. So I'll open it up for discussion on those of you that participated in anything and where you think we are and how we might move forward on this. I personally believe this is the highest priority on this committee right now, at least from what I've seen and heard from our objectives in City Council. So
who would like to start? I would just comment that since we're having a new finance director, we probably want to wait until he's on board, and then we can share with him where we're at and what we've done so far and get his input. That would be my suggestion.
I think that's a good suggestion, but the one thing I was going to say is that there seemed to be agreement that the pie chart way of presenting the information was good. And also, if we want to do something simple like what Homer had presented, which I was a little concerned of because there's no indication of where the money comes from. And I'm always worried about they think that's our hall money, and they think, oh, we could put federal money on top of it. So one of the things is that I think we should continue with the pie chart, and if we wanted to simplify it, we could come up with some other ideas when they are on board, and we could say this is the direction that we find most. And I think a gentleman had said something about would your neighbor understand it, and I think that's the question we should start with when we do it, so we know that if our neighbor could understand it, because I know I felt very comfortable, but then I've been looking at this and talking about it, and then when Homer put his up, I said, I like it, but I would have liked a little bit more in depth, so that's my comment.
I met with Homer. He was very generous with his time. And it boiled down to some fairly simple things that he was saying that I didn't understand when he presented them. Basically, there were three items on the revenue side and then offset by expense that appeared to be, I hate to use the word, double counting. Mm-hmm. And to make sure it's clear, that does not mean in a negative, pejorative way. It just happens to be the way the accounting is set up and that they could have been transfers. But there was a risk management internal service. It does not appear to be a revenue item. It looks like it's a transfer. It's not like it's a separate source of revenue. There was a wastewater treatment plant of $2.487 million, $2.4 million. It was the same way that it looks like it's the same money that's in water revenue. So, again, it does not look like that's a separate revenue source. And there's a small item of unfunded compensable leaves, which is, again, I think more like a transfer into that. So his point, I think, was really we're overstating the total revenue by those amounts. And you would offset that by the expenses, by those amounts. So I think when all was said and done, that was really all he was saying. To me, it wasn't real clear that that's what his point was. He was basically saying, you're not stating the revenue right. Well, that was what he was talking about, these three items.
Yeah, there were some inconsistencies, and they were talking about the numbers being inconsistent, and that would be something that we'd have to have clarified because of timing or something.
Actually, just for the record, Homer Alexander is a citizen. He's been very helpful and been a former Measure Q member, committee member, so he's been very helpful with his suggestions. I do agree with what's been stated. We did say we wanted pie charts. We had some maybe consistency in footnotes and labeling. And we also, another citizen, Glenn Silway, I think summarized it very well. There are two different issues here. The number one is the overall revenues and how you ensure you are not double counting anything because of interfund transfers that have to occur. And then secondarily, which is some of my concern, was how you also break out the details so that it balances to the published budget on the official published budget, basically. So two a little bit different objectives. That's okay. And also we've discussed that we have a couple different things here. Number one, the high level might be just a couple pie charts or a couple pages. Then we'll break it down into more detail and then thoroughly right down to the budget. So I guess the first question, Susan, is we're almost ready to go with the pie charts. We just didn't have the exact numbers after we accounted for these anomalies with the interfund. So who has the latest numbers that we should be using if we have all agreed after meeting with the citizens what these interfund transfers are? Do you have that, Susan?
So it depends on what you want to have taken out. Mm-hmm. Because when you're presenting a budget, you're presenting your budget on what's happening in that fund, and that fund is all by itself. So the risk management fund gets money from other funds, and then it pays for insurance. And it charges the departments for the insurance, and it gets its money from them. So the risk management fund operates on its own thing. When you start parsing it out and saying, well, this money isn't real money, and what is real money that comes in, that's something that Homer was working on to arrive at what was real money. And we had sat down for quite a while and we went through each of the funds and I said, yes, that's real money. Yes, that's real money. No, this isn't. The wastewater treatment plant is just a transfer from sewer, but it is getting real funds from Cayucas. So I said you can consider that as real money. It's coming from an outside source. It's not just something that's, you know, flushing around in the city. Same thing with the savings accounts. He was looking at, well, is this transfer real money? And I said, no, it's not. you're moving money from an operating fund into a vehicle reserve, you're moving money down here. So Homer was working that part of it out. He and I pretty much had it laid out pretty well, but he had a few things that he was working on to try to clarify them, to see if he could get some notes on his pie charts, and that, I told him that was fine. So I haven't taken any further steps with it other than what I've done with Homer.
Yeah, and I was present also at that meeting with Homer, so I have the same data that Homer had. There was still an issue of the expenses, the employee expenses, because if you remove the revenue source, especially when they're working on an enterprise fund, you have to also remove the expenses and charge it over. So, and at the present time, the employee expenses were accounted for in the general fund. So there's still a little bit more work that needs to be done, but I think we're very, very close to having final numbers for the amount coming in and the amount going out total and for the general fund, and which is what we talked about putting in the pie charts. So I'd be happy to move forward with that. And
you have the numbers. I want to make sure somebody
numbers.
Here has
I do
those
have
numbers.
The numbers.
Okay. So if, let's say, for example, I'm thinking out loud, if Marlis could, I think Dave has the latest copy of the pie charts in electronic format. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. So here's where I'm going with this. If Marlis could give Dave the latest numbers, and then you just tweak your pie charts that we presented at the workshop, then before we publish that, we provide it to Susan, who will provide it to the new incoming finance director and his staff as a draft as to what we think should be reported at a high. I want to make some progress on this, and I don't want to be waiting around, and I want it to be an easy thing. And maybe they might, if they've done that, have that experience, they might say, hey, you're making too much of this, or you're making too little. But I think it would be a good start that, hey, we have a draft to give you. This is what we think from a high level we should report to our citizens. Are you in agreement? Is this something that is repeatable easily? And take it from there. So.
Yeah, I think that was the issue. It does require pulling numbers from the full document of the budget, and that might be confusing if that's published and then our numbers are not the same. So that is an issue.
And that's exactly why I don't want to publish it. I want to give it to them as a first draft. This is the best we can come up with. We want to accommodate the interfund transfers without confusing everybody. We don't want to, quote, double count things that are coming into one fund going to another one, as they should be. And how can we communicate that to citizens and then maybe take it from there? I don't know what else to do because, you know, we're spending a lot of time and we're not getting anywhere. We're not getting.
From my perspective, now that I know what it is he was talking about and understanding it, I don't personally have a problem with let's make sure we true up to the city budget because not having those numbers be the same is going to be more difficult to deal with. And I'd rather, through this course of this next year, deal with maybe we shouldn't have these transfers the way the budget is presented. My main concern was I didn't understand really Homer's numbers. Now that I've got them and he's not saying they're wrong, so if we subtract the numbers out, we're going to weave a difficult web here. So potentially we leave them the way they are. We true up to the way they are now, which means the pie charts are real close. And we can explain, if somebody says, well, isn't that two numbers? We say, yes, it is. But that's the way the budget's done.
Mm-hmm. That's the way interfund transfers are handled.
We don't want to be changing the accounting. There's I have some other issues when I started looking into the detail like that. But this is not the time to change our accounting system. This is the accounting system.
Right.
I agree, and that was my biggest concern with the whole thing, that it doesn't balance to what's published out there. So, but anyways, what I'm saying now is I think we're pretty close. As Marlis said, if she can get the numbers to Dave, he updates his charts, we send it to Susan and say, hey, here's where we're at. Present this or, you know, communicate this to the new staff.
But I am hearing two different things now. One, we need to true up to what's the published budget, which means we would include those interfund transfers in our pie charts, versus we're only going to show the money coming in and the money going out, so we know exactly how much revenue is coming into the city and how much is going out, even though it will not actually look exactly like the budget.
I misunderstood.
I can go either way, but I would say true up to the budget and have, quote-unquote, the double counting.
Put in the transfers in and out.
Include them the way they're shown in the city budget, which makes it look like a separate revenue source. Because otherwise, we have, like I say, go into the expenses and figure out where to pull out, and it gets, and then somebody else truing that up is going to be very, very difficult. So trying to be technically precise, I just don't think it's going to buy us what we want. We know what it is. If somebody asks, we can explain it.
And you can always make notes on the charts to say interfund transfers are generally movement of money from one fund to another. They're not real revenue, or they're not real expenditures.
What's not clear is why these were treated other than an interfund transfer. I get, because most of the rest of them are in a column that it's interfund transfers. These were some that aren't treated that way. There's a few other issues that seemingly on the accumulation funds were similar, where I didn't find some, let's say I found some what I thought was inconsistency in the way those were treated as well. But this isn't the time to change the accounting system. It is what it is.
Well, that's a good point. And the other issue is when we looked at some of the other cities' budgets, I saw a lot of pie charts that said interfund transfers. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't attempt to, you know, let's take this out and not confuse everybody. This is what it is. Somebody asks, here's what it is. Here's why it's that way. It would certainly be a lot easier, and we would probably be right there now, I think, with what Dave has.
I think we started there.
We started there, yeah.
And some of the oddities have to do with the nature of the fund. So if you've got an internal service fund that is supposed to be collecting revenues from its customers, which the city is its customer, and it's actually commingling money from general fund and enterprises, it has to keep everything very clearly defined. So to show it as just a transfer could be a problem. It becomes a problem from the nature of the fund and the way you have to present the fund. So it's, you know, kind of,
I think it makes it more clear to the person, even though it's less confusing at the beginning, because we did have this one comment that about politically motivated accounting, and it's not politically motivated accounting. It's numbers that come in and way it's transferred and the way it's process, and it has to be all clearly shown. So I think that's important to have it as accurate as possible.
I agree. Good comments. And again, another process or project that will evolve over time, but at least if we can balance it to the budget, even though there are some anomalies and interfund transfers, I've seen it on other cities. And once again, take this draft to the new personnel, say, hey, here's where we're at. We think we're 95% there. Help us. I mean, they have more background on this than we do.
Well, and new perspectives, too, because they're coming from a city that may have done it another way, or in the case of Sandy Martin, she's coming more from the private sector, mm-hmm. where she's worked with counties. Mm-hmm. So she may have a different way of looking at things as well, and that's great. There may be some really good changes that can be made based on what they've learned from their city or their entities.
Perfect. So, Dave, if you don't mind, would you send us all the latest just to make sure that we have? And then maybe then I can forward it to, you know, if we don't have any comments on the charts, and then I'll forward it to Susan.
Well, I think we should relook at them. Our subcommittee should relook at them and agree what they need to say.
Okay.
Before we pass them on to Susan.
Yeah. So first step is get them out to the five of us, and we'll meet if anybody has any comments.
Okay. Isn't it just the subcommittee, or can we meet?
We can meet.
Mm-hmm. We can all meet together?
No, the subcommittee.
Subcommittee, right.
Okay.
I just want to clarify something. So Marlis will send me numbers, or we're going to go with what we have now?
No, I think we should meet, go back and look at our numbers and make sure that they match the budget that's been published.
I think also as a subcommittee, we need to talk about what are we going to put into this document? Are we going to show the enterprise funds? Are we going to leave them out? Are we going to include Measure Q or whatever? So I'd like some clarity on that. What actually is going to go into this draft that we're going to send to the new finance director?
I'm sorry, I wasn't clear. I was thinking everything we presented to the public, which was the Measure Q and the funds, but why don't the three of us on the subcommittee confirm that we are still good with that?
I'm fine with that, actually, just if we send it the way that we had it for the public, but
now we're talking about changing it, so we do need to.
I'm not.
No, we're not. Oh.
I'm not. I'm saying thank you, Homer. Appreciate your comments. Keep going.
Okay. All right. Let's just confirm.
Yeah.
the three of us.
Yeah.
Just confirm
what
we're.
I think that would be useful.
And, all right.
As far as getting this together. The new finance director is coming on board when?
October 3rd,
okay. So our next meeting will be?
The 18th of October.
The 18th, okay. So would it be advisable to say that we should have this together by our next meeting or sooner?
If you have it sooner, I can present it to him sooner.
That's what I would like, so that at the next meeting, maybe he'll have, and if not, at least he'll have something to review. So that means we should be done and have it to you in 2 weeks, right? Yeah. Would that be fair?
And there wouldn't be any reason for the full committee to look at what we send the new finance director before we send it?
I'm okay with if the three of us confirm. I think we just had maybe a couple footnotes or something we were going to edit.
I think we need to add some explanation, to make it clear what we're presenting.
And it's a draft.
Yes, it's a draft.
So that's why I've called it first draft.
Yeah, and then it'll be presented at the October 18th meeting, and Craig can provide his input, and the other committee members can provide theirs, and then we can decide how we want to tweak it or what. Yeah.
And if we get it done pretty quick, we can certainly have a day or two to make sure the other committee members don't have any. I don't want to reinvent the wheel and redo it. I think we spent so much time on it that it's not perfection, but it's 90% there. Let's get the draft to the new management, and then we'll, that would be my take. Three of us will talk after 1 week and just meet briefly, hopefully. Everybody else okay? Bart, you okay with that plan? Okay, Betty? Okay, thanks. Okay. Future agenda items, B6. Okay, so here's what I have. So first of all, a general announcement. We still have openings on the committee. I understand the city is going to be recruiting mid to late October for candidates to serve on this committee or any other committees that have board positions expiring up to January 2017. Interviews will be in December. Sounds like mid-December. And so that's just a general announcement. Based on that, I would ask, since hopefully we'll have some, we already have one relatively new member and we may have some more, that we could have a orientation or a Brown Act briefing. And I assume you'd be doing that for all the board members just to kind of help.
I talked to Dana about that last time because that was something that our city clerk, Dana Swanson, I had asked about that, and she said there is training that board members can do online, or if we wind up with enough board members that are new, she could look at doing some kind of a training and having our city attorney do that.
Okay.
So I guess if there's something online that you can get to about Brown Act training, that would be one way to go.
So could you ask her to forward that?
I'll ask her if she can provide me with anything she's got.
Rather than us Googling it and trying to hope we get to the right site.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. Okay, so that was one item I had. The other thing, Susan, I wanted to talk to you about or talk to have our committee weigh in on the process for requesting support staff work. We have several things on our work plan, and I think it's important that we're able to get information, but I also know that we're supposed to adhere to the work plan before we ask staff for resources. So it's one thing to email and ask a question. It's another thing if it involves a lot of research. And we're going to be having new members. So I think if we could put, if the rest of the committee agrees, if we could put that on the agenda for next time with your new director there, is how they want us to handle, for instance, as Marlis does her research on the benchmarking, and that if she needs assistance, what's the proper procedure? Typically on our other committees, we have to go through the chair and that, but I just want to know what the city staff expects of us so that we can adhere to that.
I think we've been doing pretty well. Most mm-hmm. of the time, committee members contact me and ask me for documentation or anything they need. So, of course, Craig may have a different way that he's done it mm-hmm. in the past, mm-hmm. so that's a good thing for him to be able to weigh in on.
And I'm certainly okay with that, too. They don't necessarily have to go through the chair if that's his, as long as they're working on something that's on our agenda in one of our projects. So.
Right.
Yeah. And then finally, I think our charter, the CFAC charter, is not out of date. It was really something put together when we started. We were anticipating accomplishing more and having more members. We don't have that now. And I think some of the items are repetitious, and I want to make sure that it's accurate so that if people are considering joining, they understand what it is we're supposed to be doing or what we plan to be doing. So maybe what I would ask are that you put it on the next agenda just for discussion. But what I would ask our members is get on the website, look at our charter, and see if you have any suggestions of things. I think it could be shortened. I'd like to see it a little briefer and a little more focused, not just a laundry list of to-dos that we're never going to get to.
And I know that the list of the task list and the plan, that's something that's adopted by council, mm-hmm. as was the policy. But we can always make changes to the policy to see mm-hmm. if there's something that you feel should be made clearer.
Well, I'm okay with the task list for the draft, the work plan for this year. And that's primarily what we've been doing. But I don't think it maps to the charter. And I would like to suggest that we look at that, we make some suggested changes, edit it, and then we'll take it to council, provided staff agrees, and say this is realistically what we think our charter should be. Remember, when that was put in place, we were Measure Q, meeting a couple times
right.
a year. We were not the, and now we've been in place for a year, and we've had some turnover. We've had over half of us serving on multiple boards. So I want to be realistic about what our charter is and what we can do so that maybe we can recruit some more people and just reflect what we're doing. So that would be my suggestion. Comments, questions?
It sounds like a good idea to me, and I will definitely look at the charter and mm-hmm. make any recommendations.
Agreed.
Okay. Anything else for future agenda items anybody would like to see on there?
Yes, but it could be like 6 months when the new people are mm-hmm. here. I would love to know more about the IT systems and sort of what's there. But if we're going to have, interviews, I don't have a problem with waiting until next year when mm-hmm. the new people come in. But at some point, I'm very interested. Probably not, but I'm indifferent to the management systems being used for WRFCAC or mm-hmm. for WRF. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a different thing, which has a life of its own. Mm-hmm. But certainly the internal systems to get sort of a better feel for how many and which ones, and God forbid we'd want to go look at an SAP conversion. But
well, you never know. We could be asked to do that, so just having the history in the background would be excellent.
It could be at some point, but just sort of to get a sense, I'm sure the new person's going to be looking at that anyway. He's going to want to know and understand what's there, so he's going to be doing something to get his own understanding. So as a future item, it could be 6 months.
So my suggestion would be hold that thought, don't lose it. And Susan, what we would come back and ask after the new year is, could you have the Sam Taylor equivalent come and give us a 30-minute PowerPoint question and answer? And that would be wonderful. It would be an education for us as well. Thanks, Bart. Excellent suggestion. Anything else for future items? Okay. So any other comments, closing comments from anybody or? Before we adjourn, public comment, anything? Open for public comment? Sure, state your name, sir, please.
My name's Larry Truesdale, and when you did B1, you never asked for public comment, and it's just
I'm sorry.
A few things that I may know a little bit about. One is Capitola is listed as a potential community to compare to. Mm-hmm. We have to manage a trust of someone up in that general area, and I suspect the cost of living there is much higher, and that it may not be an appropriate comparator. So you could probably check that pretty quickly and either eliminate it or say no. Our experience isn't exactly what I believe it will be.
So you're referring to, like real estate and cost of living there?
Yeah, you're looking for similarities to Morrowbie.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I'm skeptical Capitola will be it, but I don't have the hard numbers. You may be able to eliminate that quickly, save some time.
Mm-hmm.
The things that came to mind, and again, I don't have the hard numbers, so just suggestions, so whoever's doing it. Half Moon Bay, Bodega Bay, possibly Eureka, although I think it might be too big. Fort Bragg, I think, was mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find things on the coast that are like this. Either it's much bigger are more, much wealthier. Those are the ones that come to mind. I just thought I'd offer those suggestions.
No, thanks. We'll appreciate it. We'll take that
They may help you. They may not.
You know, if we can eliminate or add something easily, that's certainly what we want to do. I think that was also Dave's point about that we're a little bit focused on the coastal thing, but maybe we need to think out of the box and get something that's still
several
tourism, but not
harbors and stuff.
Right.
For
right.
sure. And that sort of helps, but keeping it in the right price range for cost of living and size is challenging.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you for the suggestion. And I had one other thing. Bart, you had asked about the water reclamation facility. We are working with that, or at least I am working on that committee, and trying to get an accurate accounting of the costs and that. So we're going to get our first quarterly report, hopefully at the October meeting. I'm not sure when, September 30th, but they have committed. They've been giving us some information, primarily contract-based, but we are going to get a simplified accounting of that. So that will be good. So we'll involve us more here as that moves forward. So, okay, anybody, any other comments before we adjourn? Okay, we will be adjourning 5:02 p.m. Thank you all. Meeting adjourned.